Welcome to the Construction Technology News of the Week with the Construction Dorks. From groundbreaking innovations to industry-shaking updates, this is your Construction Technology News of the Week. Join us with our guest of the week as we dig into the latest news shaping the future of construction.
On to my first one. This is a heady one, and I'm putting it out there because he's a friend of mine, and I was waiting for something to emerge from him, and it finally has, and it's going to be in a three-part series. This is part one. It's on LinkedIn. It's from Sean Olcott, and it's BIM is dead. Long live BIM. A briefish commentary on the past, present, and future of BIM, part one. Now, this one is an incredibly heady breakdown of sort of where we are today and historically how we got here. So it's kind of funny because, like I said, you know, Sean's heady and goes into history and talks about, if you don't know the number of different Caesars that existed between Julius Caesar and on that we actually don't realize changed over time, and how the term BIM has historically changed as a piece of the terminology and how we talk about it and what it refers to, and sort of kind of the origin story around BIM being Autodesk's way to differentiate Revit from AutoCAD, and how it created digital databases for collaboration and changes, but, you know, preserving this use for industry specific applications later on. And, you know, honestly, that created a perception that BIM is really, you know, narrowly associated with the tools that run it, Revit, Navisworks, you know, and mainly for 3D modeling and clash detection, which really limits kind of the view and overlook of BIM's broader potential for the industry itself and where it could go. So it's really talking about the fact that we use terminology to simplify in order to explain the technology, but that actually sometimes pigeonholes and limits our understanding of what it can do, and that BIM was always a larger thing than one given product or process. And I think we see that same thing with VDC. I don't know where necessarily Sean's going with it, but it's time that Sean hits this at the end that, you know, traditional BIM tools are yielding diminishing returns, and it's time for new platforms, new technologies, and new possibilities for the AEC industry to look beyond currently what we think of as those tools. And you know, there's a lot of them emerging very quickly. Everybody's looking for the Revit killer. I mean, way back when I got started, that's 10 years ago. The Revit killer is not here. Revit's not dead, unfortunately, or possibly, or maybe. It's not going anywhere for a while. But the platforms and things that Autodesk themselves are building around it to amplify it, that others are building around it and amplifying it, are here. And so it's like the traditional BIM is dead. Long live the new BIM. So I'm interested, as I'm the one talking BIM with my two BIM guys. So, you know, Trent, I'm interested in kind of your take on Sean's first part and kind of first take on where he's going.
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the ConTech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@thecontechcrew.com to learn more.
It's a little satirical, I think, you know, on purpose, but a lot of the early, you know, BIM, I think the word was so misunderstood so many years ago, it ended up, and it still is. I think one thing that hasn't changed is that it's probably one of the more misunderstood word or acronyms in construction, but it kind of just ended up being used as to describe any three-dimensional, you know, software in construction. Like it everything just kind of got lumped into it. And it is really interesting that although things have changed a lot. I mean, I'm really going back to, like, you know, first doing virtual design to then, like, the last bit I did. And the software platforms did change. I mean, when you think about from AutoCAD through, you know, especially in the mechanical world, going through like Fabrication CAD MEP, something that you were drawing with actual manufactured items and then into Revit. And then on the coordination side, you looked at light tables to Navisworks to Revisto. I mean, you know, so I don't know. I feel like software platforms have changed a little bit, but, you know, we're still just calling it all BIM. I think it's really interesting. If anything, BIM is probably the perfect acronym for a large language model on a building project. Like, wouldn't it just be the
it would just be the BIM?
Maybe that'll be the new. Maybe that'll be the new. The
you
new
better
BIM
run out as soon as we're finished with this and IP that one. You know, write it down on a piece of paper. Put it in what they call an envelope.
You heard it here first, folks.
So
use
BIM,
a thing you call
BIM
a stamp
dead,
and send it to yourself.
Long live BIM, the AI language model. There you go.
Yeah,
it'll be the. No, it's a. I don't know. I feel like my answer is a little vague, but it's a satirical topic. It's a it's a little hard to address, but I really think things have changed, at least from what the avenues that I went through, the software and the processes and things have changed, you know, quite a long way. But maybe,
well,
the end result doesn't look much different though. So I think that's what's got people a little
right.
flustered.
I might challenge that in a second, but Travis, I'm interested in your thoughts.
Well, as I'm thinking through it, I think that what you said, even your description was vague. So we've created a name for a process that was incredibly vague. And by trying to describe that process, we made it very specific, kind of. And as we're talking through this too, what I've kind of found interesting while I was thinking through all the stuff that I've learned about, like, instead of trying to the software platforms and stuff, instead of trying to do the process and build up, you know, maybe what might be considered better software, we kind of just kept adding D's, right? We added additional D's to the whole BIM process where we're 4D, 5D, 6D. I don't know if that's, yes, people are trying to build use or trying to leverage the information better or get more use out of it. And, you know, some people are also just, you know, entrepreneurs are trying to make a product to sell, but we just kind of kept stacking things on top of this thing that was already kind of vague. It is kind of, the article is very satirical. I'm really interested to see kind of where it goes because it is kind of funny. It's like, we've been talking about this for 25 years and it should be time for an evolution, but are we just going to slap on another D to the stack and kind of keep the core of the same?
Till we get to 11, right?
That's right.
Did we know what, if we're going to call this final product the BIM, right? I know that'll get Jeff Elwell rolling. Obviously, if we're going to call that BIM, did we even know what we were aiming for? I mean, what is the desired deliverable in a building information model? I mean, like, what is the...
Because it doesn't have to necessarily be 3D, right? I mean, it could just be the information that went to build the building. That's the BIM.
I would argue the acronym itself really didn't have to be anything three-dimensional to begin with. I mean...
Right.
No, it's right. It helped certain people understand it, but also pigeonholed it. I think that's sort of the thing I was going to argue with you, Trent, on, like... The process from where you sit has changed significantly.
Oh, for sure.
Has improved significantly. But I think it's like other things, because it was pigeonholed to what it was, it's limited its ability to grow across the stream. And it takes a really unique owner and GC to leverage and use it in the way that the trades get so much value out of what it can drive and do for them. And so this idea of it is not evenly distributed, because not everybody's seeing the even distribution. And that goes to our business models, right? Like, that was the other problem and is the other problem in this is, you know, he calls it, you know, is BIM the new CAD, right? Basically, we took, and you hear this a lot, especially upstream, not necessarily in the trade world, but upstream, you hear this a lot. Like, it basically just replaced the CAD workflow. Okay, but the CAD people worked in and of themselves on their own, didn't talk to each other, let alone to anybody else involved in the process. Thus, we created a silo. it's a cooler silo, and in some cases it's actually probably a more difficult, expensive silo, but we didn't adjust our business processes and our ability to work together. So that's some of the limiting pieces that I think once it distributes out, and that's one of the reasons it hasn't done that. And so I'm with you.
Do you think that VDC is actually an improved iteration of BIM? Because I would say VDC, in the way that I have them kind of segregated in my mind, and this is more from a trade focus again, is a more useful tool, or is bearing more fruit. And this is kind of still more trade focus, but in theory, what's drawn in VDC should be built in the shop and field.
Right. Well, like I said, it depends what the finished product is and for who. You know, the general contractor, maybe for the customer, they wanted the three-dimensional building model of rep, but the trade contractor,
you have to do BIM as a contract requirement. You're going to put some pretty shapes
but none of that matter to, you know, pretty isn't productive to me, right? Like, I don't care for a three-dimensional pretty building model. Like, I designing things for constructability and efficiency in a fab shop for assembly and then installation in the field. So it's like, I think more ass came of BIM, which made people alter their workflows to fit this desired outcome that maybe didn't even have anything to do with their desire to begin with. It's,
you know, how, like you said, Travis, sometimes you say things that come out and you're like, did I really say that?
I don't even know.
But I wonder now, I'm not calling either of you out. I'm wondering now if VDC became a term just because BIM got stagnant and we couldn't get anybody else to think any differently, and that it was a process that was building and information and modeling, and it didn't come together. Somebody's like, well, try a new term and see if that'll help us virtually design and construct. And ultimately too, though, if you look at, you know, the future and the people who've really grasped from beginning to end what it can do, is it can virtually take us into the future, help us design better, input better constructability, find other problems, find new ways to solve problems. But, you know, I'm interested in where he goes with it. So I'm going to switch us to this one. Comes thanks to Tanis. So y'all know our co-host Tanis Laviniak here, who's on quite a bit. She posted out on LinkedIn, a new era for construction starts with rethinking leadership. It's the Ambition Theory and NCCER have released a report on leadership isn't just about business success. It's the reason people stay or leave. And when asked what's pushing them out of the industry, the majority of women point to poor leadership as the driving factor. If companies want to solve their workforce challenges, they need to start by rethinking leadership. Now, this is focused on women in construction and why they're leaving. It's really important for us to understand an underserved group that is experiencing those problems. I'm also going to say that by reading it and looking into it, it's, to me, speaks to innovators as well. It speaks to anyone that's not from this industry or not classically invited into this industry to succeed. So companies say they're developing leaders. Women disagree. 42% of women say their company's leadership programs fail to address the challenges they face or help them advance their careers. Mentorship exists, but it's not enough. 63% of companies say they offer mentorship programs, but only 30% of women report having access to one. That's interesting. Nobody ever lied on a survey. Even when they do, mentorship alone doesn't provide career-defining opportunities. Sponsorship is the missing piece. Only 31% of companies have a formal sponsorship program. Without direct advocacy, too many high-potential employees get overlooked for leadership roles and high-profile projects. ERGs, employee resource groups, will not fix this. 35% of women say their company's employee resource groups don't help them advance. Yet, companies continue to rely on them as a leadership development tool. There's another one. Let's look at the data. The real issue, how we choose leaders. The industry still prioritizes a transactional leadership skills, execution, authority, and control, while overlooking the transformational leadership skills that actually drive results. And here's the positive. The companies rethinking leadership are seeing real results. Organizations that embrace transformational leaders see 30% higher retention, stronger financial performance, more innovation, increased safety, and better morale. So it's kind of like everything. It comes down to not only putting a statement out there and saying you're about it, but actually digging in and being about it and changing. A lot of what we do in construction is doing it the same way over and over and expecting different results, the definition of insanity. It's one of the reasons why I would say, you know, better leadership helps retain the women in our industry, but it also helps retain the high performers and it increases all of those outputs.
This survey more around construction companies?
This was all around construction.
Okay.
So this is just for construction and construction leadership.
This could be a communication problem. I mean, I'm thinking that this probably gets better as more women elevate to leadership positions in construction, but I don't think it's any mystery to anyone listening that the leadership breakdown of construction companies is probably pretty male at the moment. I think it's getting better and it should get better, but it's probably not there yet. So this could just be some male leaders are probably just antiquated communicators, and maybe these mentorship programs are in place, but maybe they just don't know how to communicate with women. I mean, it really could just be something that dumb that just isn't connecting. And I feel like there's a way to educate on that. And I mean, sometimes it's, you know, you have to, as a leader, it's your job to, you know, to visualize a goal and an outcome. And then, you know, your ambition bestowed upon your workforce actually wills that into reality. I mean, it's like painting a real picture that everybody can get behind. And if you can't communicate that properly and get that same excitement, people are going to feel pretty let down by your leadership. So I wonder if this is just poor communication, maybe. I think
some of it too, we talked about even like, and this is not an excuse, it's actually kind of sad, but it unfortunately just takes time, right? You know, we've talked a lot in the last few years about, you know, kind of the new workforce we're trying to attract and the new policies in place. And to your point, Jeff, like you got to put more than just lip service to, and maybe the initial ones were that. And hopefully they're starting to see that we're not retaining these people, that we actually have to really put some real teeth into it. But my goal, my hope is that if we just keep pushing it out there, like we're turning an industry that is a slow moving ship, right? And to like what Trent was pointing out before, like, you know, a lot of the leadership in our industry is still male, and we've got to turn that.
Yeah, but I'll challenge that it's also that we're following an old set of conditions that don't exist anymore, right? ERGs, they don't work. True, like leaning into what you do and doing it differently is the power of change. And we're not embracing that. We're expecting old ways to work in a new world, and they don't work. And we have to start prioritizing what we do in a way that actually impacts it. And I'll challenge that I can't just will this one into fruition, because I just said this to somebody else about something I've been going through, is that like what I'm hearing is one thing, but the signals that I'm seeing are completely different, right? And so what we don't understand in the industry, and an easy way to do this is like one of the easiest things to understand is when a female shows up, do you have the right size safety equipment? Do you have enough female specific porta potties? Do you understand having someone who could be pregnant on your job site and understanding those things? By not having them, but then saying you want those things, you're signaling differently. Like we've got to align. And this is not like a coming down on it, right? Because I actually think, Trent, in some respects, like some of this is silly because we don't see it. Once you see it, you
I'm
can't
not saying the whole thing
it.
Is silly. I just
oh,
think
I know. I don't think you did. I think some of it
were silly reasons that we
yes,
end up
that's
in.
Right.
I mean.
Right. It's just simple oversight in some ports. Right. It's not like intentional or anything. It's just
I don't know
not
if it's
way
sinister.
That,
right. Not all of it. I think yeah, it's no. kind of. I really think a lot of it is just misguided, and you don't even really understand how dumb you are at times. Yeah.
I think a lot of places, you know, I'll point to us, like in SmackNow, we do a lot of stuff now on succession planning and career path mapping and those kinds of things, because, you know, to borrow a Vince Lombardi line, and I'll twist it, like
Sometimes you have to change your people. And if you can't, you have to change your people. Sometimes if you want new leadership, you need new leaders. And hopefully we are starting to put those in the younger generation likes to see, what is my five-year plan? What is the plan for my position? Where can I go with this? And hopefully our companies are starting to kind of understand that. Because, you know, old businesses way back when seem to understand, like, it's a lot easier to keep someone and have them be productive for 20 years than it is to replace them every two. And I think that, and we've all seen it in our careers, we've seen people that jump quickly. And I think that maybe this younger generation wants to stick around more, but we have to have that scaffolding in place that makes them have a place to stay. Yeah.
I will tell you too, from my experience too, some, like, a lot of the women I've worked with have been way better top level planners than me. And I feel like maybe, you know, and maybe this is true of more men like myself, but we tend to be a little more tactical at times where there's a problem. So it's like, well, this is the problem. I'm going to tactically solve it, which is really like a brute force thing. But I've worked with women that have been, you know, they've almost like planned and foreseen those problems that would have come up. So that leads to being a little more demanding of a leader. So I could see where they would, you know, they're,
you just hit that. That's your execution, authority, and control, right? Versus the planning, understanding, and preventing it. So that's the difference in exactly what you're talking about, and us valuing that over the classic command and control style of fixing. So again, it's the, you just hit it, and that's exactly what they're saying in there, I believe. So, all right, Travis, bring us home. What do you got?
It's kind of comical because before we started recording, I said it's really hard to find articles without AI and tariffs. And so far, we've mostly talked about AI and tariffs. But my final article is about AI. And it's nothing kind of new. Business Insider magazine put out an article. A Boston-based construction firm is leveraging AI to keep roughly 30,000 workers safe. And this calls out Shawmut, a Boston area general contractor who's using these, you know, some AI powered software. It does a good job of going through, you know, because it's using AI and GPS location on its workers to identify possible hazards, to alert people to different constraints. So it does a decent job on how they're going through and anonymizing the data to make sure that they're not tracking their employees and not feeding all their personal information into AI. It's just, for me, it was kind of interesting. Like I said, we've talked in the past. We've seen some platforms in the past that used computer vision and other things on video cameras and in pictures to pull out, you know, maybe this person's not using a hard hat. Maybe they're too deep in the trench, et cetera, et cetera. But they're putting this application on, I don't remember if they said personal phones or work phones. But either way, that's on the actual worker's phone, and they're using it to kind of build that network to create a safer environment. There's obviously some privacy concerns, like I mentioned, but I think that it's just one of those indicators where people are really trying to figure out a way to use this tool.
Yeah, I haven't been able to figure out on this one where it's actually coming from. What I think is interesting is that it's proprietary. They have a partner who's building it with them. And they're, again, focused on safety, which is always a good thing. I thought this was really interesting that they put in here. I mean, they're pulling from regularly available data sources, which I think
right.
You know, lots of programs have done for years. I think the institution of AI does a better job of correlation, right? And that's some of the things it can do really well. And, you know, it's looking for, you know, National Weather Service forecast temps, weather events, and the fallout, freezing pipes, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But this is cool. If there's an influx of new people to a job site, but not an influx of new leaders, it gets flagged.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most key component when a job site is ramping up. It's when the safety incidents occur. You need to have eyeballs on. And there is a particular set, and I forget who was on that was talking about it, but they had literally figured out that there's like a perfect correlation between the number of safety people and eyes on to the number of people hours on the job as it grows at any given moment to keep it safe. And this being able to calculate that quickly, while, you know, again, we have to think about the privacy, et cetera. That's true. But I think this is really cool on that ability to predict and get ahead. It's just one of those things we don't do well. So Trent, you know, it's an AI. So, you know.
Yeah, it's really just another example of how AI has really just proven to be a great data scientist for, I mean, I think to me, this looks a lot like there's all these things that we've kind of been collecting for a long time. And like, you know, even GPS and personnel movement on a job site is something that we've talked about for years. I don't think that that's new, but what is new is all of these different data points are kind of getting married together now. And it's pretty cool to see like science that's now being formulated from all this data. So it is pretty cool. It seems like they've come up with at least a way to marry some of these things together and hopefully produce a meaningful result. So
we should give them a shout out. It's Shamit, if anybody's heard of them. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. Shamit. They're building it themselves and they have some really cool future thoughts. Like they're just saying it's not here, so we're working on building it somewhat ourselves. And this was cool. He imagines in the future where every employee wears a badge linked to a digital map of a job site. In this world, the AI system would alert managers in real time the moment an employee stepped out near something dangerous and would hopefully alert the employee at the same time that they've walked into a CAS zone. You know, how nice would it be? And I heard this as a reason for fabrication is like the electrician said the scariest part of their day was leaving the room and not knowing what they were about to open the door into. It could be something over their heads. People could forget mm-hmm. they were in there.
This is like air traffic control for construction.
I like that. I like that.
It's the new FAA for it's the
it's what it reminds me of. It's kind of almost like it's like you're starting to, you're almost turning the job site into this puzzle board now where like it's almost like a game board where the pieces are moving around.
Well, like collision detection on your car.
Well, that's cool, too, because, Trent, if you know the FAA and how it works and the flow of planes all over us, there it's optimized for performance. So there is an opportunity over time to look how things are flowing and see if there are ways to alternate the flow. You've got certain pinch points on lifts and whatnot for access controls for people getting to sites and the timing in which they get to sites. You know, we saw this during COVID where you had to stagger who was coming when. You know, because there could only be a certain amount of people in certain amount of places. So in those types of incidents, we can do it. And we've said this since the beginning. I remember all the way back to Triax. You know, it's also about knowing everyone and where everyone is on a job site in case the worst case happens and we yes. have to send in and put our first responders at risk. We're doing it because we're sure of where those people are. And we can give them the best directions to get there, the safest for them and the safest for the first responders. So
I wonder if like construction, like if 2 week look aheads and construction look aheads can be fed into this and can run simulations of what's going to happen. And then you can see from the GPS data side by side in real time reality versus what the simulated plan was. It's going to be really interesting.
Well, I think that'll help a lot. I mean, I was on an AI summit and Julian Clayton from Procore was talking about it. And one of the key components to this process is the planned versus the actual. And then, but then feeding back the actual in and understanding why it deviated from the planned. Because a lot of times the planned was not realistic, not constructible, not deliverable. You know, you're asking to do things at height that you cannot do at height. You're trying to do things that don't fit in certain places. So you've had to adjust. Well, if we feed that back into the model, we get better every time. And, you know, his point was that's how generative AI is actually going to come to fruition, which I thought was really interesting. That it got pretty far out. By the way, if you guys haven't seen that episode or if you haven't checked out the AI Excellence in Construction, go check it out. Placer Solutions put it on. It was really informative. I learned a lot just being the moderator for the day. So super cool that we can do these kind of things. Well, Dorks, it's been a really fun time. We're going to break this into two episodes. So we're going to have lots of episodes flying around out here. Trent, Travis, thanks for sitting down with me and bringing the articles and getting a little interesting.
Yeah,
that was great. Appreciate it.
And thank you for tuning in today to geek out for the construction technology news of the week with the Construction Dorks. To read all our news stories, learn about our guests, and to listen to the show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is the Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.